King who holds us together. In the church calendar, today is celebrated as Christ the King Sunday. The two scriptures readings before us, the first one that Toby read to us from Colossians 1, as well as the gospel reading from Luke 23 that Adeshola just read to us. Both readings lift our eyes to Jesus as King, but from very different angles. In Paul's majestic affirmation of Christ's eternal power and dominion in Colossians 1, we saw the revelation of Christ as King in his glory. While Luke's raw and painful account of Christ's crucifixion shows us the King in his suffering. Same King, but revealed through very different angles. These two passages before us today give us the full picture of what the kind of King Jesus is, the Almighty, all-powerful, all-glorious King, and the humbled, crucified King who suffered like a common criminal. Paul writes that in him all things hold together. Not some things, not just spiritual things, all things. So if you woke up this morning, it is because Christ held you together. If your mind, your body, are functioning well, if your breath, you know, is still all the way it should be, if your family, this church, this nation, or even this world has not completely fallen apart, it's because Christ the King is still holding creation together. In him, all things hold together. I like quoting Corrie ten Boom. And pardon me, I have to quote her again this morning. Corrie ten Boom once said, "There is no pit so deep that God's love is not deeper still." Colossians 1 is Paul saying the same thing with theological clarity. There's no place in my life, in your life, that is beyond the reach of Christ's sustaining power. In him, all things hold together. In him, all things hold together. And this matters because many of us sitting here today may be feeling as if life is not holding together. Maybe your career feels unstable. Maybe your family situation feels fragile. Maybe your health or the health of someone you really care for and love deeply feels uncertain. Maybe it's your sense of purpose that feels unhinged. But hear the good news this morning. You do not hold your life together. Christ, the glorious King, is the one holding things together. And yet, this glorious King is also the humble servant that we meet on the cross. So in those two passages we read, We heard on one hand Colossians lifting us to the heights of Christ's divine glory, reminding us powerfully about how glorious, how powerful, you know, the eternal Son of God is. Telling us he knows all things, he can do all things, he's all powerful. And then we found in the gospel reading, with Luke taking us to the lowest place on earth, in Golgotha, the place of suffering like no other. There, Jesus, the King of Kings, between two convicted criminals. God, in his wisdom, chose to reveal his kingship for the salvation of humanity that way. It doesn't make any sense to me. And that doesn't make any sense to most people. But God's wisdom is not like our logic. It's not like our own human wisdom. God chose to reveal his kingship for the salvation of humanity, not in golden robes, not with soldiers bowing, not with trumpets and pageantry, but with crown of thorns. You know, when we get a president or head of state visiting us here in the UK, the more powerful those head of nations are, the more pageantry and pomp you get. I mean, you remember when Donald Trump was here the last time? I'm not saying anything about Donald Trump, but no expense, you know, was withheld in hosting him. You saw how lavish the pomp and pageantry was. But the wisdom of God, he chose to reveal the King of Glory through the crown of thorns. You and I may admire kings who look powerful and glorious, but Jesus was the king who on the cross looked powerless and humiliated. Yet, we are here this morning before of that crucified King of Glory. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, that's a German theologian who died in the hands of the Nazis, said, "Only the suffering God can save." It may not make any sense to us, but only the suffering God can save. Luke tells us that one criminal mocked Jesus, but the other one whispered, one thief was mocking Jesus, but the other one whispered a prayer so simple that anyone in any condition could pray it. He simply said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus responded with royal authority, "Truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." There was no probation period. There was no religious examination. There was no moral resume. There was no even confirmation classes. Just a simple cry of, "Jesus, remember me," led into the King of Glory, saying to that convicted criminal, "This day you will be with me in paradise." This is the unexpected glory of Christ. His throne is a cross, and his crown is made of mercy. It's easy, brothers and sisters, very easy. When we picture Jesus in Colossians, the all-glorious, all-radiant, supreme, powerful Christ, that Jesus many of us really love. That's the one we want. It's harder when we picture him on the cross, bleeding, mocked by criminals, by hooligans, bleeding, mocked, vulnerable. Many people don't want that kind of savior. And you have some religions in this world that they believe in that all-powerful, all-glorious Jesus, but the one treated like a criminal, vulnerable, they don't want to have anything to do with. But brothers and sisters, as Christians, we need both images of Christ because life gives us both realities. There will be days where we will feel like what Christ is described as in Colossians, strong, clear-headed, beautiful, glorious, majestic. And there will be days that will feel like Christ on the cross. Days where we will feel broken, exhausted. We will feel like horrible, stretched to the extreme. The truth is, Christ is king over both situations. A missionary tells the story of a tribe that only worshiped our God after hearing the story of crucifixion. That particular tribe said, "Oh, we've been introduced to all sorts of gods. We've been introduced to all these powerful gods and goddesses who can shout, and you have lightnings and can split the rock into two and so forth, and so on and so forth. But we never loved such a god or a goddess." They said to the missionary, "Now you tell us of a God who suffered for us, a God who knows pain like we do." They said, "We can relate to this God, and because he can relate to us, this is the God we want to follow." And this is the transforming power of Christ's kingship. He enters the darkest places so that none of us can say God does not understand me. In Hebrews 4, verse 15, I'll read from the Message translation. Hebrews 4, verse 15. I'm not sure if we have that on this slide. It says, "We don't have a priest who is out of touch with our reality. He's been through weakness and testing, experienced it all. All but the sin. So let us walk right up to him. Let's walk up right
up to him. Take the mercy and accept the help. We cannot say he doesn't get us. We cannot say he cannot relate with what we're going through. Jesus understands the refugee because he's been a refugee. He was a refugee in Egypt. Jesus understands the single mother working multiple jobs. Jesus understands the heartbroken father mourning a lost relationship. Jesus understands the victim of injustice. Jesus understands the older woman grieving the only true friend she ever had. Jesus understands the young woman carrying shame. Jesus understands the young man wondering if faith is still possible. Jesus understands anything we are going through because he has taken on this, you know, this human flesh. He had been subjected to pain, to shame, to vulnerability. He knew what it meant to be hailed as king one day, but for the next day, for the same crowd to turn against him and say, crucify him. He knew what betrayal was. He knew what slander was. He knew what pain felt like. He understands and he can redeem any situation. In a world where power often crushes, Christ's power restores. It does not oppress, it does not heal, it does not push people down. Rather, it heals. It does not conquer through violence, it conquers through sacrifice. It does not reign as king by fear, it reigns by love. In a world where political domination, where the rich and the powerful often suppress others, in a world where there's global anxiety, the peace of Christ is offered to each and every one of us to reassure us, to heal, to save, to deliver. These days we've got technology, but technology can only can maybe connect us, but they cannot heal our souls. We've got great corporations now, but they can comfort us, but they cannot save us. Governments can pass all these laws and policies, and we'll get more from our politicians later this week. But none of these laws and policy can really deliver us from evil. Only the crucified king, who can really relate to us, can genuinely say, my peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Do not let your heart be troubled and do not be afraid. Christ's peace required a cross, and this has resulted in, you know, what we call a new creation. That is each and every one of us who now believe in Jesus as King. Jesus, our King, he is our peace and genuinely is worthy of our ultimate allegiance. So on this day, which I said is Christ the King Sunday, it's not just about acknowledging Jesus' reign, but it's about participating in it. You and I are not spectators. We are not passengers. We are not just tourists when it comes to the kingdom of God. We are children of the King. We are members, citizens of his kingdom. And we've got work to do. And this work should show up in all the choices we make day to day. Part of our work as children of God's kingdom is to signpost others to this kingdom and to model what this kingdom is all about, to forgive when it's easier to hold a grudge, to serve when it's easier to be selfish, to speak truth when it's easier to stay silent, to give when it's easier to just accumulate, to love when it's easier to walk away, to welcome when it's easier to exclude, and to trust when it's easier to fear. When people look at us as Christians, they should see the character of the crucified King living through each and every one of us. And as I close this talk, I want us to go back to the prayer of that thief in our story from the Gospel of Luke. That prayer is the simplest prayer any human can pray. Jesus, remember me. Maybe someone is here this morning who doesn't feel religious. Or maybe you watching, listening to this talk online, and you're not even a Christian yet. Maybe you even feel like that thief, too broken, too damaged, and you feel things may be too late. But the gospel says it's never too late. When the King himself is standing right next to you to receive you. That thief had nothing to offer. No good deeds, no church membership, no baptism record, no promise to even change. He had maybe only minutes left. All he had was a need to be remembered. And that need was enough for the King of Grace. So let me speak plainly to you. If you all you can do is pray, Jesus, remember me, then that is more than enough for the King of Glory. So we're going to pray now, and we're going to be aided with a Taizé chant, which is going to be playing in the background. And I want you, please, to bow your head and bow your heart and pray. Pray in your own words to the Lord this morning. Use this period to pray for yourself, for those close to you. Pray for the issues in our community and the world. And if you think, you know, I don't know what to pray for or to ask for, just remember that thief. All he said was, Jesus, remember me. And that was good enough for the thief, and I'm sure that will be good enough for you today. So let's bow our heads.